and ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson. Middle of the week already, and boy, the NFL is really starting to heat up.
Yeah, a lot of player movement today, and, you know, for the Seattle Seahawks, I think that dynasty is pretty much done
now.
It's
done. It's done. Seahawks are done. Well, I shouldn't say they're done, but that group, that core, they're done.
Yeah, Richard Sherman will be the next, probably to be released here in the next few days, maybe week or so. He had a meeting today, told people around him he doesn't plan to be back in Seattle, so we'll see where his next destination is. But the Eagles, they get Michael Bennett.
Yeah, the Eagles do get Michael Bennett. I'll say this about, I'm not a Michael Bennett guy.
Me neither.
I'm not. I don't know. To me, looking at Seattle, Michael Bennett is a guy that's an addition by subtraction. I'm not a Michael Bennett fan. What did he bring to the table last year? Yeah, he shores up that passing attack a little bit. Yeah, it's a move on the outside front. I get it. But trading him to the Eagles, I think, is the right thing to do. I am curious to see how long Pete Carroll hangs around in Seattle now that that core is done, now that that core is finished. And again, the talk about Richard Sherman, that's not official yet.
No.
He's still a member of the Seahawks as it stands right now.
Yes, he is.
So they're making moves. I think there's going to be a lot of different faces in Seattle next year. They're going to look drastically different as far as those individuals, those teams in the NFC West. But speaking of teams in the NFC West that continue to make moves, the Los Angeles Rams traded Alec Ogletree to the New York Giants. This was reported about 2 hours ago. The Rams will get two picks in this year's draft. They're going to get a fourth and a sixth from the Giants, and in exchange will send them a seventh pick in 2019. That fourth-round pick is the Giants' second in that round. It was a compensatory selection. But the Rams continue to try to clear cap space. They used the tag yesterday on LaMarcus Joyner. You would have to believe that this is a move to shore up Sammy Watkins and Tremaine Johnson, right? I mean, I can't think of anything else this team's doing. The Rams were not good against the run last year as well. And they gave Ogletree a four-year, $42 million deal at the beginning of the season, which I thought he deserved, but I thought he took a step back last year. He made splashy plays, but the Rams were not good against the run. They were 28th in the league against the run. So maybe that's why they're trying to shore up the middle of the field, plus trying to get Wade Phillips' personnel in there. That's why Robert Quinn is gone. That's why Alec Ogletree is gone.
Yeah, the draft picks, and like you said, it has to free up cap space to bring back Sammy Watkins. You have to bring this guy back. I think he's very important to the Rams, and if they can get Sammy Watkins back, like I said last week, I think the Rams are the favorite in the NFC.
Well, the Giants are in desperate need of linebackers. The Rams go from a 4-3 to a 3-4 with Wade Phillips. That's part of the reason why they moved on from Robert Quinn as well. It's going to be very interesting for the Rams. They create $5.2 million in cap space. They now have close to, they're over $50 million in cap space. Double the amount of cap space in 2019. So in the short term, the financial flexibility can be used to pick up Sammy Watkins and Tremaine Johnson. And I'll say this about the Rams. You believe they're the front runners in the NFC, even after this trade, and this roster is still an incomplete right now. If you add Marcus Peters with Tremaine Johnson and LaMarcus Joyner, that is the best secondary in the NFL.
Yes.
I don't think there's any question.
It's not close, yeah.
So you got to make sure you shore up your own free agents. The Rams have the ability to negotiate with their free agents right now, so this tells me that maybe they have an agreement in place. They've given up a lot of quality players for cap space.
Yeah, and I think, like you said, that they've been talking to him, and the deals are going to get done with both.
I think the Ogletree deal, it's a locker room. That's a locker room shift because that guy's a leader for this team. But I will say this, Les Snead, Sean McVay, Wade Phillips, this team's not afraid to make moves.
No, and that's what you got to do. You got to be aggressive. It didn't work last year, so retool it a little bit and go from there.
And as far as some other moves in the NFL go, it's going to be crazy here in the next week. It's going to be crazy. You're going to have all kinds of movement in the NFL here relatively soon. You and I were talking about the New England Patriots possibly getting richer this offseason. They release Martellus Bennett, and they may actually be reacquiring a defensive back as well.
Tlaib from Denver. Denver and the 49ers trade talks stalled. Tlaib said he prefers to be released so he can sign with the New England Patriots.
Of course, right?
Of course. Goes back to New England where he had some success there and then left New England, signed that, what, six-year contract with Denver. So time's up in Denver.
Diana Rossini reporting that his top choice would actually be New England if he was, in fact, released. Like I said, the next, the next week or so, there's going to be a lot of movement. So I'm actually looking forward to it. And speaking of the salary cap, the NFL has set it at $177.2 million for 2018. So that's what teams will have to be working for. You know, it's so interesting. In the NBA, teams, there's no hard cap in the NBA. So you constantly see teams going over the cap. NFL is designed so different. It's hard to hang on to a player over the course of his career if he's not at his skill position, offensively.
Yeah.
Running backs, quarterbacks, wide receivers, even wide receivers. Sometimes you see wide receivers go. We may have seen Dez Bryant play his last game in a Dallas Cowboy uniform. Who knows? But the NFL, the way it's structured, it's just so different. And you see these teams making moves like this. It's going to be fun over the next week in the NFL. If we take a look at some of the other national sports headlines, it has been somewhat of a quiet day outside of the NFL. All eyes right now are on the NCAA with their conference championship tournaments. Last night, BYU had a chance to punch their ticket. Instead, they were punched by Gonzaga.
Yeah, they're probably headed for the NIT. I don't see any way possible this team makes the tournament.
You know, they had an opportunity to showcase something to the selection committee. I believe they're a PI 67. So they're right at the bottom to begin with. They didn't help their cause last night. Now, Gonzaga's good. I get that. St. Mary's is not bad, and BYU took it to St. Mary's the night before. So, I'm with you. I think that they're done. They needed to win last night in order to get in. As far as some of the other conference championship tournaments go right now, we have Cal and Stanford going toe-to-toe with the Pac-12. Stanford up on top of Cal right now, 27-17. As far as the Pac-12 tournament goes, if you're a Ute fan, you are definitely going to be paying close attention to this tournament. Because Utah's right on the bubble. I think the Utes have a great chance of getting in if they can make some waves in the Pac-12 championship tournament. Obviously, if you win, you're in. But the Utes are right on the bubble. We had Greg Peterson on the show yesterday, who's one of the finest basketball college basketball minds I know, works for SiriusXM Radio. He said he had the Utes on his first four out, so they'd be the next four in. He doesn't think they get in. They're the number three team coming out of the Pac-12, but he just doesn't think they're going to get in. That's saying something.
Yeah, I think Utah has to get two wins and to even give themselves a chance in this tournament. I think they get two wins, and then we can start talking.
The Utes will play tomorrow night against an opponent still to be determined. Now, let's talk NBA here for just a moment. As far as the schedule in the league tonight goes, the Utah Jazz are going to return at 5 o'clock tonight. They'll take on the Indiana Pacers, and so Drive Time Sports will be cut just a tad bit short as we get you out to cover. It's a big game for the Jazz.
Yeah, the Jazz got to prove that they can go on the road and beat a Indiana's a quality team, aren't they?
Yeah, I agree.
So you got to go on the road and beat a quality team.
They're quality, yeah. Toronto at Detroit at 6 p.m. We get Memphis at Chicago. The Rockets will take on the Bucks. We get the Pelicans at the Kings, and then the Cavaliers at the Nuggets. Those two games in the 8 o'clock hour. Nightcap tonight, Orlando at the Lakers. We got a break for just a moment. Fun show planned. Coach Scott Mattson of the USU Eastern baseball team will join us, and we're going to talk some boxing on Saturday. Deontay Wilder, an American heavyweight. He's a champion at 40-0. Knocked out Luis Ortiz in the 10th round. Had to really dig down to come from behind to get this victory because he was almost KO'd and almost suffered his first loss in round 7. It's a collision course. One of the biggest fights in boxing to be made would be Deontay Wilder and Anthony Joshua. I want to talk about Wilder. I also want to talk about Canelo Alvarez, who tested for a banned substance yesterday, and some other news and notes in the world of boxing. That's what's coming up here on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports. We're back after this.
At Emory Medical Center, patients are like family. They offer the most comprehensive care around, including on-site x-rays and lab work, helping you get quality health care at one convenient location. Emory Medical now has extended hours to better serve you. Open Monday through Thursday, 7 a.m. until 7 p.m., and Fridays, 7 till 5. To make an appointment with one of the trusted providers, please call 381-2305. Emory Medical Center. Your friends, your neighbors, your providers.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty Health Share. Liberty Health Share is a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital. Starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit LibertyHealthShare.org.
Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And the high school baseball season is officially underway. The Emory Spartans traveled on the road yesterday to meet the Gunnison Bulldogs and came up short 10-6 in a game that was called in the top of the seventh inning. Emory trailed early 1-0, but fired back by scoring two runs in the second. From that point on, it was all Gunnison. They scored a total of 9 runs between the third and sixth inning. Emory made a run. In fact, they scored 4 runs in the top of the seventh and actually had bases loaded with 2 outs and senior Easton Gordon up to bat when the umpires decided to call the game due to light. Despite the late rally, the Spartans struggled to hit the ball throughout the game. They finished with just 4 hits, 3 of which went to Colton Wilson. As a team, the Spartans accumulated 17 strikeouts in the contest. The Spartans had 2 individuals pitch throughout the game, Jace Collard and Logan Healy. The 2 combined to give up, but the 10 runs, 4 of which were earned. Now Emory will have an opportunity to bounce back and log a victory as they travel on the road this weekend to Mesquite, Nevada. They'll play in action Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll bring you the updates on the Emory Spartan baseball team throughout the week as they continue the non-league portion of the schedule, gearing up for next week's region game against the Grand Red Devils. Now, we continue on with the high school baseball scene, but we move over to Carbon High, and the Dinos opened up the season yesterday at the USU Eastern Baseball Field as they welcomed in Springville. Unfortunately for Carbon, they were unable to log any runs. It was a pitcher's duel through 5 innings before Springville scored 2 in the 6th and added 2 more in the 7th. Triton Abeda was charged with the loss on the hill for the Dinos. As a team, Carbon accumulated again just 2 hits compared to 8 for Springville. Carbon also had 2 errors on the afternoon. The Dinos will have an opportunity to get back on track as they travel to the Pizza Hut Classic Friday and Saturday in St. George. It'll be a heavy slate for the Dinos. They'll take on Dixie, Payson, Judge Memorial, and an opponent to be determined. We take a look at what's happening today in the high school sports scene. And after suffering a 4-1 loss to Layton Christian on Monday, the Emory Soccer Squad will return to action. They'll travel on the road to meet the Gunnison Bulldogs. The Spartans are once again under the direction of head coach Troy Winter. And again, they suffered a 4-1 loss in the season opener on Monday. Following today's contest, the soccer team will travel to St. George tomorrow and Friday, and again on Saturday, making it 4 games. In 4 days and 5 games in 6 days to get the season off and rolling. The Emory High School Girls Golf Squad will open up region play today. They will travel on the road to Moab to face the Red Devils on their home course. The Lady Spartans have yet to lose a region match since the creation of the program nearly 4 years ago. The Lady Spartans are also coming off of a state championship performance last year and have plenty of returners on this year's team. Now, the Carbon Dino Boys Soccer Squad will open up the season today under the direction of Coach Chad Cadell. Carbon will open up region play in the opener. They'll take on the Union Cougars. Start time for today's contest is set for 3:30 p.m. That is a home contest for the Carbon Soccer Squad. And the Lady Dinos golf team will also be in action. They open up region play on the road against Macer Prep. Start time for today's contest is set for 11 a.m. And circle your calendars for this Saturday. You don't want to miss Fierce MMA's P-Town Beatdown, which is taking place at the Garvin County Event Center. Tickets are on sale now for the event and will also be sold at the door. VIP tickets will also come with dinner. The main event will feature local fighter Cy Nelson. He'll be stepping back into the cage, and you'll also see plenty of other locals on the card, including Carbon High School students Mason and Holden Sorensen. KOAL's Drive Time Sports tomorrow will be geared towards Saturday's event. And again, make sure you circle your calendar. It's Fierce MMA's P-Town Beatdown this Saturday at the Carbon County Event Center. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Does your IT support company keep you safe by automatically checking your backups every day? Keep you in contact by automatically checking your email systems every morning? Keep you running by checking your Windows services, internet ports, and network connections every few minutes? Keep you protected by checking for hacker attacks and checking your antivirus systems each day? Hi, this is John from Maxfield Technology. We do all this and more. Give us a call today at 801-900-6393 and save yourself hours of downtime and frustration trying to maintain your business systems on your own.
No one likes to shovel snow. What's even worse is when you let the snow pile up because you have a snowblower that can handle any storm Mother Nature throws at you, and then... it doesn't start. Don't let this happen to you this winter. Take your snowblower to Scott's Small Engine Repair. Scott will prepare or fix your snowblower so it's ready to work when the first big snowstorm hits. Scott's Small Engine Repair, 2832 South Highway 10 in Price. Call 435-637-2562 to schedule an appointment. Scott's Small Engine Repair, where experience counts.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Local baseball talk today on the Coach's Corner. We haven't talked USU Eastern baseball a whole lot. Been wrapping up basketball, but I'll tell you, the baseball team got off to a brilliant start. They sweep Colorado Northwestern four straight games over Thursday, Friday, and Saturday this past weekend. They'll look to carry that momentum into this weekend as they travel on the road to take on Salt Lake Community College. Joining us right now over the phone to talk a bit about that, we have Coach Scott Madsen of the USU Eastern baseball team. Coach, always fun to get you on. Thank you again.
Well, I appreciate you, Jordan, having us on. We're excited to get this year going again.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, we're talking about it now, although you guys have been in action for almost, a little over a month already between the non-conference schedule. But conference play starts up last weekend, and as you and I were talking about off of the cuff for the first time in quite some time, we were in a four-game sweep to start off the season.
We did. You know, our guys, we've kind of early, we struggled leaving a whole lot of runners on base. And last weekend, it all seemed to come together with our hitters. They did a good job of hitting when we had runners in scoring position.
You guys won the first game 8-5, second game 7-3, third game 11-4, fourth game 6-3. I know things were spread out a little bit because of the weather, so it was basically four games in 3 days, right?
Right. We ended up playing three innings that first day and then yanked the tarps out and covered it for a couple hours and pulled them off. And we finished the first game the second day and then played the next game and got all but the last inning of the third game in that second day. So then we just finished it all out that last day.
How difficult was that, playing four games in 3 days when you're used to playing two doubleheaders in 2 days?
You know, it was wearing on these kids, especially where we're out working on the field. I mean, even playing those games that second day, we played so many innings, and we were out there for 2 hours beforehand getting snow off, just making sure everything's dry and ready to play. So, I mean, these kids were wore out, but, I mean, their will to win this weekend was something else. They've come a long way, learned how to play together, and, you know, just kind of work off from each other.
Well, let's talk about some of the performances, Coach. First off, the very last game of the four-game set, Cole Fawcett put together a pretty solid performance for you guys. Didn't register any hits in the plate, but he was very productive with his at-bats. Provides a couple of RBIs, and then he takes care of business on the mound, coming in and shutting down the opposition for four innings, not giving up a single hit or a single earned run. Cole was pretty good for you guys in that fourth game.
Absolutely. You know, he's been solid for us on the mound the whole year. We ended up trying to pull him as a closer, but he's just been so good and getting so many innings that we've moved him to the starting role. And this last weekend, our backup shortstop, Steven Ortiz, ended up pulling his hamstring the last game when we were in Las Vegas. So we were trying to hold him as long as we could before we put him in. But when he went in, he lost to him once in preseason, and, boy, he had something to prove that last game.
Another pitcher that will resonate with people here locally, Jared Lesser, gets a win for you guys. That was in the first game, I believe, of the series.
It was, you know, and he was throwing really well. He kind of got the shaft a little bit where he only was able to throw those first four innings, I believe, is what we played that first three or four innings that first day. And, you know, with sitting and as cold as it was, we didn't bring him back. I didn't want to risk it this early in the season to have him go. But he was really throwing well, and, I mean, he was dominating their hitters.
Coach, when I was going through the box scores, a couple of names really were productive for you guys offensively. Chandler Barkdell did a fantastic job, it looked like, at the plate, as well as Jesse Rowley. It seemed between these two guys, you guys had some steady production in the lineup.
We did. You know, Chandler's been solid for us all year. He's struggled getting base hits, but he gets a lot accomplished even without getting the base hits. I mean, his batting average was low, but his on-base percentage was really high. He works pitchers better than I've ever seen a batter work pitchers. I mean, he's constantly seeing 7, 8, 9 pitches in that bat and just doing a great job with two strikes. And he's done that the whole time getting on base. And, you know, Jesse missed that first weekend where he had his baby. And then so he's just kind of slowly broke, getting kind of back in the swing of things. And last weekend he just took off. He looks good. And that's kind of what we were waiting for. I mean, we've kind of based our entire hitting group around Jesse because he does have that potential where he can carry a whole team.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned what you did about Chandler, because for someone who maybe just goes out, watches a game, and you casually watch, or if you check a box score after the contest, one of the things that can fall underneath the radar is a quality at bat. I mean, you don't have to register a hit to have a quality at bat. So when you talk about Chandler, I mean, it seems like every time this kid is at the plate, it's a quality at bat in some regard.
Absolutely. And that's, I believe that's something he carried with him. He was a transfer from Western Nevada when they went to the national tournament over in Grand Junction. So he's been there. He knows what it takes. And you know what? He's done a good job, and it's carried to the rest of our team. We've done such a good job this preseason of getting through that starting pitcher and making them go to the bullpen early in the game. And that's something we've kind of been proud of. We were hoping to get our pitchers set. And I keep telling them, if you guys keep them under three runs or less, we'll win any ball game. And you know what? It's been proven that that's the case for us this year.
Yeah, you talk about keeping them under three runs or less. At the same time, if you're putting up 7, 8, 6, 11 runs per contest, it's very difficult to lose games like that. In fact, I don't recall too many instances where you lose a game scoring 7 or 8 runs.
No. And that's the thing is, I mean, you want to go out there and keep them. You want that difference so your pitchers don't have to pitch with the stress on them. But this team has just been, I mean, I was hoping to get 4 runs out of them, and they've exceeded my expectations just with their approaches at bat, but let alone scoring the runs. And I don't feel like we're hitting as well as we could. That's what I mean. Most people are saying, oh, you guys hit really well. And I'm looking at it thinking, man, these guys are going to put up 20 runs. You just watch later in the year as they start to get more and more comfortable.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Scott Mattson of the USU Eastern baseball team. Coach, now that you guys are 4-0, I mean, this obviously, this is a huge boost in the conference standings, because looking at the remainder of the schedule, when you'll be playing teams, you know, 2 doubleheaders back-to-back, and that kind of takes care of the season set. For you guys to be sitting where you're sitting at right now at 4-0, you already have a 2-game lead on the next 2 teams, which would be Salt Lake and CSI. I mean, that's, I don't want to say it's unfamiliar territory, but it's a great spot to be in. You couldn't ask for anything more at this stage.
No, this is a great opportunity for us. And, you know, I mean, this season's so short that if you have a bad series, then you're at the bottom and you're just fighting your way to stay in the middle somewhere. But where we have this boost at the beginning, I mean, this is a great opportunity for us. We came off a pretty good preseason, the best we've had in a couple of years, and then coming out and going 4-0, which we haven't done. I mean, I don't know if we've ever done that, to go 4-0 off the opening series. I mean, that just gives us energy and the momentum to run with these other teams, because we've played. The only team we haven't played yet is Southern Idaho. They haven't played us in any of their preseason tournaments. But we played Salt Lake. We know what they're about, and we're prepping as best we can to go out against a good Salt Lake team. But these kids, they're confident that they can go out and play those guys and compete with them.
You go on the road this weekend for Salt Lake, 4 games. And, I mean, realistically speaking, it's always difficult to win on the road, right? I mean, if you can pull out 2 games on the road, you consider that a successful road stint?
Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of the rule of thumb, is you try and split on the road and win at home. And that's what's been said. To win a league, that's how you're supposed to do it, is what I've been told. But, I mean, we have some good arms going that we're going to go out and hope to get those first couple of games from them, and then hopefully we can end up winning that series. So we just, I mean, we're getting stronger and stronger as the year's going on, and our kids are showing that as they're getting deeper and deeper in the game. With Jared Lesser, I mean, he's constantly giving us 5 to 7 innings a game, and that's what we're expecting from him, and he's going to start that first 7-inning game and hopefully get us through the whole thing. And then, I mean, right now we have such good pitching and such good arms that I feel confident going to anybody in my bullpen.
It is a long season, as you alluded to a little bit earlier, Coach, but the schedule sets up somewhat odd. You guys are going to finish the year with a lot of road games. I believe the last 2 series of the season are on the road, which I guess puts even more emphasis on what you guys could accomplish this month, because following this contest with Salt Lake, you get 2 straight weeks at home against Southern Nevada and CSI. This is a huge month for this team.
Absolutely. And these kids are ready for it. We've been on the road for a long time, and just watching them come home and be able to play the way they played last week, and that gets them more excited to be done with this next weekend and be back home. For we were actually home 3 weeks, and then we just end up, because we switched with Colorado, then we travel there, but then we're back for 2 more weeks. So I mean, we should have been home 5 straight weeks, but I'll take the little break in there. But these kids, I mean, they're excited, they're tired, they're ready to be home, and they're energetic to show people around here what they can do.
It seems like last year, there was a stretch last year where you guys were on the road for like five consecutive weeks, if I remember right.
Right, and that's, I mean, it flops every year, so next year we'll be back on the road for five straight weeks again. So
puts even more emphasis on you guys taking care of business at home. On the injury front, Coach, how do you guys look at this stage in the game?
You know, we're recovering from some injuries. We Colton Lundell, who pitched a lot for us last year, he's been injured, and he had his first outing last weekend, and he threw one inning, threw really well that one inning. And so we're excited to have him back. Our shortstop's battling a hamstring right now, and, well, our backup shortstop, Steven Ortiz, he's been key for us. He's a good hitter, really fast kid. He's one that we're kind of just – we're hoping we'll have back this weekend because this is a great opportunity for him to play on this turf where he can really steal bases and get on base for us and do some damage. But other than that, I mean, we've lost a couple of freshman pitchers. We lost our left-hander, Dalton Virgil, his first outing. He popped his elbow going out against Arizona Western, I believe it was, that game we won. And then Jackson Smith was a young, great arm. I mean, he sits about 88 to 90. He recently found out that his shoulder's torn, and I guess it's been torn since he was about a sophomore in high school. So we're excited to get them going on their rehab and get him back for next year, throwing hard again for us. But, I mean, we've battled through some injuries, but this team's, I mean, this is such a great team. They play for each other all the time, and it's always about the other person. That's something we've tried to emphasize, and they've bought into it. So we're excited. I mean, when one person's hurt, I've had to move positions, play kids in different positions that they're not used to, and they're doing a good job doing that.
We'll end with this, Coach. I don't know a whole lot about Salt Lake, but I did follow the series with Southern Idaho over the weekend, and after they won the first two games, they lost the next two. And they didn't just lose the next two. They gave up 10 and 8 runs, which leads me to believe it's a very top-heavy pitching rotation. Is that a fair assessment of Salt Lake, or what happened in this series with CSI that you guys can exploit this weekend?
It is. You know, I've watched them play, and they have some great arms, and they're going to have some athletic kids. But I've noticed, too, that, you know what, their kids throw hard, but they can struggle with control. And that's something that fits right into our hand where we're patient hitters and we like to, and we'll work a pitcher till he's out. And that's kind of something that we've pushed the whole year. So that's where we have the advantage is we understand what their pitching staff's like. And you know what, they're good, but, and they're left-handers. They just throw left-hander after left-hander at you. And that's all we've been working on all week. But that is something that once we get through their starters, which we've done well all year, I think we have a good shot at beating the rest of their bullpen.
Coach, I definitely appreciate you taking out the time. Hopefully we can catch up again next week. Best of luck this weekend against Salt Lake.
Okay, thank you so much, Jordan.
Again, that's Scott Mattson, a manager of the USU Eastern Baseball Squad. They sit at the top of the Scenic West Athletic Conference standings with a perfect 4-0 conference mark as they prepare for week two of the conference season. We're going to break for just a moment. When we come back, we're going to talk boxing. Been a while since we have dedicated an entire segment to just boxing, but we had Deontay Wilder throw down this past weekend with Luis Ortiz. That sets up what could be a mega fight against Anthony Joshua, if Joshua can handle his business at the end of the month. We'll talk about that, plus Canelo Alvarez and Triple G, all that and more coming up here on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports.
News Talk KOAL's Jordan Buscarini covers all the pros and lots more, like high school and college teams.
Straight away three ball. God! Phillip Winston from the top of the key.
These are the sports that are closest to home. When you've got a guy like Jordan, you can cover it all. Drive Time Sports.
Here we go, here we go!
Weekdays from 4 to 5 on News Talk. 107.3 FM, 750 AM, KOAL.
Spring is around the corner, and Sutherland's is here to help you get ready. Ferry Morse packaged vegetable and flower seeds are all 25% off. Plus, an 8-quart bag of Miracle-Gro seed-starting potting mix is only $3 and is specially formulated for fast root development. For better root growth and soil drainage, add Miracle-Gro Perlite. And for a limited time, buy one, get one free. Get the yard ready, too, with hot buys on pruning sets, leaf blowers, chainsaws, wheelbarrows, and more. Only at Sutherland's.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
We're going to talk some boxing here on Drive Time Sports. It was a big weekend for boxing. We've seen that there was Over a million viewers for the Deontay Wilder heavyweight bout against Luis Ortiz, which took place at the Barclays Center on Saturday. Of course, Wilder picking up a 10th round TKO, setting the stage for what we hope will eventually be an Anthony Joshua showdown. And then, of course, the news breaking of Canelo Alvarez testing positive for a banned substance ahead of his showdown with the Triple G. Joining us right now to talk a bit about that and more, we have Tony Whitby, our boxing insider, on the phone right now. Tony, it's been far too long, but a pleasure to get you on. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, JB, boxing right now is in a good spot. It's healthy in 2017, and it keeps rolling in 2018. So it's a good time to watch the sport.
No doubt. No doubt about it. Let's dive right in and talk about Deontay Wilder. Look, Tony, I think you and I are going to share similar opinions on this. I was not impressed with Deontay Wilder on Saturday. I wasn't. I understand the grit. I understand the, you know, what he had to battle back from, because I thought the fight was over in the seventh when Luis Ortiz unloaded on him. I think we were probably 5 seconds. If that round's 5 seconds longer, this fight has stopped. However, he managed to battle back. He got the 10th round TKO. But with that being said, I'm not anointing him anything at this particular time, because he still has a questionable resume, and the overall performance was not that great on Saturday night.
I would definitely agree with your sentiments in regards to this. I definitely think that Deontay Wilder, you know, he showed something that we haven't necessarily seen in public on a massive view, where he's been through, you know, trial and fire. He's been through it all. We saw it this time, and this is the first time he's ever, let's be honest, really been tested. And granted, Ortiz has, you know, he's had his issues and, you know, with management and promotional deals and everything. He hasn't been the most active fighter. And, you know, he really tested the waters with Wilder on Saturday night.
No doubt about it. No question. I mean, he was definitely tested through some deep waters. So I'm going to ask you this question, because I know we could probably spend a whole hour talking about it. Do you believe that Deontay Wilder is a viable threat to Anthony Joshua in the heavyweight division right now?
That's the million-dollar question, JB. When it comes down to this, that fight is a beautiful fight to happen. It deserves. It should happen in England, because of the money that's involved with it, because Joshua being Joshua, taking it from Klitschko, it should be in England. If it ends up being in the States, it's another thing. But when it comes to the fight itself, I think the first early rounds is where Wilder would have his best chance. And we're probably going to, if that fight happens, I'll say the same thing in 6 months, 8 months, or a year from now, whenever the case may be. That said, I really do think that Anthony Joshua is a much more higher pedigree of a fighter in comparison to Wilder. Now, Wilder being an American, Wilder being the only American heavyweight that had some shine on him in the last, you know, 2 to 5 years, if you will, or even 2 to 7, 2 to 10 years, if you will. There's a lot of people that are really riding the coattails of really getting behind the Wilder bandwagon, where they really think that, you know, Joshua doesn't stand a chance. And that's, to me, that's preposterous. Joshua is a higher pedigree of a fighter. He understands boxing a lot. He has a higher boxing IQ, if you will. So, yeah, I, hands down, all gambling odds, all betting odds should go towards Joshua, not Wilder, if you will.
I agree with you 100%. I don't think that Wilder stands a chance against Joshua. I will say this, though, in the Ortiz fight, I understand that Wilder was not feeling up to par. He looks sluggish. He weighs in at 113. It's not the Wilder that we will see in a fight against Joshua. At least I hope not. You know, but one of the things that has always bugged me about Wilder, and you and I have had this conversation on the show, I know, multiple times, Tony, because I want to root for Deontay Wilder. I want to believe that Wilder can take out Anthony Joshua. He just doesn't do enough work to the body. I mean, this guy is still a headhunter. He swings wildly, and against someone as skilled and as young as Anthony Joshua, you will pay for both of those. You will pay for both of those discrepancies in the ring with him. You just will.
Look, I've talked about this on a couple other podcasts recently. Number one, I've had Wilder on my show. He's great. He's great for boxing. He has a great attitude. He has a great, you know, he's a good conversation piece. He's a good mouth of for the sport of boxing. And quite honestly, his promotional people don't really do enough to shine him out, respectively. That said, With his unorthodox style or lack of real boxing IQ, it poses two threats. One, a threat to him, because if he goes in there, that somebody that understands footwork, ring work, you know, sizing up somebody, where you need to be, that's going to be a huge problem for him. We saw it on Saturday night. We saw how Ortiz was able to double up on a jab and then come back, and Ortiz being left-handed, coming back with a straight left hand, where Wilder was getting punched, you know, constantly with that. He was landing consecutively, you know, routinely throughout that fight, and it did not look good for Wilder several times throughout that fight. Somebody like Joshua, that's been doing this his entire life, he's going to be able to see those things and read those markings, those mishaps, and take those into consideration. Wilder's best, you know, his most vulnerable thing about him being so unorthodox in how he throws punches, where he throws punches, and like you said, he's headhunting like crazy, is actually his best asset at the same time, which makes him fun to watch because you know he's trying to knock somebody's head off. He's just trying to sit there and just wing off shots and throw haymakers. And with somebody that is classically trained in boxing like Joshua, sometimes that can be confusing for fighters, and the other time they can read right through that. I'm not saying Joshua's the next Mayweather or anything like that. Not at all. In the heavyweight division, Anthony Joshua is a fine pedigree of a fighter that I just can't see Wilder beating him without some sort of scrupulous decision or some sort of erroneous scenario occurring, you know, throughout the fight. So it's going to be a fun fight, man. It really would be. It should happen soon rather than later. But, you know, with promotional companies and management, who knows, dude? Who really knows?
Look, you know, at the end of the day, let's be excited and happy that we have an American that is once again bringing some sort of entertainment value to the heavyweight division. I'm fine with that. I get that. That in itself, I'm excited for this fight. But aside from that, look, I'm just being realistic when I say this guy's not going to beat Anthony Joshua. He's just not. I mean, let's be realistic about it. He's not at that level. And I want him to be, but he's just not. Now, let's continue on. I want to move over and talk about what went down with Canelo Alvarez. And again, call me crazy here, Tony. I need you to back me up on this or tell me if I'm completely off. I believe Canelo Alvarez, based off the fact that this guy is at this stage in his career, looking at the track record for the banned substance that he tested positive for from Mexican fighters, knowing that it does float around in contaminated meat, I can't possibly believe that Canelo Alvarez would be that stupid at this stage in his career. I believe him.
Well, let's be clear on two different scenarios. Number one, clenbuterol is a banned substance. It happens to be implemented into the cows and to the meat of the country of Mexico. It's very normal and common that does occur. That said, it's not an excuse to allow Canelo a free pass. But, however, this happens probably twice a year with a Mexican fighter.
Yes.
Or a fighter training in Mexico, if you will. There's been Japanese fighters. There's been Russian fighters that train in Mexico, and they get popped off for clenbuterol because it happens to happen in the meat. Now, I do take the stance that, you know, every fighter should know what's going into their body, and there should be zero excuses in that. And if you're training in Mexico, you should be mindful of that. Maybe get your meat shipped in from somebody else or somewhere else. I don't know. But do I think that he had the sole purpose of wanting to some sort of perpetrate this to make this something of a real, you know, amped up PED scenario to where he was really doing this for, you know, his own cause? Not at all. I do think that this was just I don't want to say random because it's very common, but it's just a mishap and a misfortune for Canelo and his team. Look, he's going through VADA testing. You don't go through VADA testing unless you want to go through VADA testing. Nobody forces you to do a voluntary doping, you know, regimen. So the fact that you would voluntarily go into a non-PAD doping regimen to make sure that you're clean, and then you get hit as being dirty, That just seems really odd and really weird. Now, that's a lot different than other fighters going through USADA or even WADA because of some of the codes and some of the restrictions and a lot of the ramifications and politics that go with that. All, you know, WADA is much more different than that. And I personally, I commend a lot any fighter that goes through WADA. And I, to me, they're the highest standards when it comes to testing. And I don't think there was any volition in this action. So anyone who's going to write off Canelo or automatically sell him as a cheater, I think that's just a little far-fetched and a little unfair. However, again, it's his body. He needs to know what's going into it. That's the due diligence on his team and his management staff where they kind of messed up.
Well, he's moved his camp now, right, to San Diego, immediately moved his camp to San Diego. So this in no way, shape, or form is going to affect this fight or its scheduled date of May 5th.
Yeah, yeah, hands down. That's the other point, too. You know, if he essentially had these same type of occurrences occurring right before the fight, that's a different scenario. We're still, look, it's March. We're still literally 2 months away from the fight. Even the traces amount, and I'm not going to get into the levels of how much is there right now, but by the time the fight actually happens, I would count on two things. One, whatever those levels are, they're going to burn off. Number two, there's probably going to be even more testing between now and then. Let's be honest. There's no way that they're going to be like, oh, no more testing. Based off of this, he's probably going to get scrutinized even more. If anything, this would probably help Gennady Golovkin's case in this fight. It's going to be a great fight, and this is not an excuse one way or the other to not watch it or to think that if Canelo wins, it's because of this. It's just, it's hyperbole at this point. It's just, it's erroneous.
Right. Tony, last question before I let you go. Do you have any care at all as a boxing fan or a boxing media member to watch Jesse Vargas, Adrian Broner, or to catch weight? Any care at all for this fight?
The joke is when it was originally Omar Figueroa, it was kind of like a win or lose, go home. You know, whoever wins continues on, whoever loses, please. Both of those guys have already had enough issues inside the ring and outside the ring. With Jesse Vargas going in and stepping in with Adrian Broner, look, without getting into a long conversation about it, if you want me to say yes or no, I won't be watching that fight live.
Okay.
I'll put it that way.
Yeah, you answered my question. Now, you're not going to watch this fight live.
Yeah, I'm not. It's not worth it. Look, I like Jesse Vargas as a fighter, and Adrian Broner, he's fun to hear him talk and hear him do his things and whatever, but it's not what I want out of boxing. It's not a fun fight stylistically. It's not a fun fight, you know, entertainment value coming up to the fight. It's not something that really holds any value in my boxing purist idea.
Tony, always a pleasure to get you on and talk boxing. I know you bounce all the way around as far as joining other podcasts and talking about boxing throughout the entire country. Any place where the listeners can hear more of Tony Whitby?
You know, we're in the works. We have a couple of deals going in right now. Occasionally, I'll be on a couple of the boxing podcasts. A couple of them out of Canada, and I'm losing out some sites right now. But, I next time I come on, I'll come out with my handle, names, and emails and all that stuff. So if anyone wants to reach out, have a conversation, I'll be able to do so more frequently. Absolutely.
Tony, I always look forward to it. Thank you again for sharing your expertise. I know we'll talk again real soon.
Yeah, no worries, man.
We've got to get out for a quick commercial break. We'll come back, put the final touches on this Wednesday edition of Drive Time Sports when we return.
Castle Country radio stations KOAL, KARB, and KRPX have money available to assist cancer patients who must travel to receive treatment. This money was raised during our annual pie auction, which is held every June. The generosity of our Castle Valley residents has enabled us to provide $100 fuel cards to cancer patients of Carbon and Emery counties who must travel for treatment. Please contact Ann Anderson at 637-1167. The process is very simple, and the fuel cards will be mailed directly to you.
Hi, this is Joe Peterson, the Chancellor of USU Eastern. I'm here to brag about an amazing student we have representing USU Eastern. Chandler Vincent is a welding student here at USU Eastern. He recently flew to Huntsville, Alabama to compete in the U.S. Open Welding Trials. After 4 days of nonstop welding, Chandler was named the USA World Skills Welding Champion. With this title, Chandler won $40,000 in tools and scholarships from the American Welding Society.